I had seen the magic shop in Regent Street from afar several times. I'd passed it once or twice. A shop window of alluring little objects. Magic balls, wonderful cones, ventriloquists' dolls, packs of cards that looked all right, and all that sort of thing. However, I had never thought of going in until one day, almost without warning, my small son, Jip, hauled me by my finger right up to the window. There was nothing for it but to take him in, for the fat end of Jip's finger was making a squeaking noise upon the glass. "If I was rich," said Jip, pointing at the disappearing egg, "I'd buy that, and that," which was the crying baby, very human, "and that," which was a mystery, and had a neat card which asserted, "Buy one and astonish your friends." "And there, Dad, is the vanishing halfpenny," he concluded, "only they put it this way up so as we can't see how it's done." Jip inherits his mother's good manners, and he didn't propose to enter the shop alone. But he pushed my finger doorward and made his interest clear. "That," he said, and pointed to the magic bottle.
"If you had that," I said.
He looked up with a sudden radiance.
"I could show it to my friend Jesse," he said.
"Well, it's less than 100 days to your birthday," I said, and laid my hand on the door handle.
He made no answer, but his grip tightened on my finger. And so we came into the shop. It was no common shop, this. It was a magic shop. It was narrow, not very well lit, and the doorbell pinged with a plaintive note as we closed it behind us. For a moment we were alone and could glance about us. There was a tiger in papier-mâché on the glass case that covered the low counter. There were several crystal spheres, a china hand holding magic cards, and a magic hat that shamelessly displayed its springs. There were magic mirrors, one to draw you out long and thin, and one to make you short and fat. And while we were laughing at these, the shopman came in. He was a curious, sallow, dark man, with one ear larger than the other, and a chin like the toe-cap of a boot.
"What can we have the pleasure?" he said, spreading his long fingers on the glass case.
"I want," I said, "to buy my boy a few simple tricks."
"Legerdemain?" he asked. "Mechanical? Domestic?"
"Anything amusing," said I.
"Hmm,"
said the shopman, and scratched his head for a moment as if thinking.
Then, quite distinctly, he drew from his head a glass ball.
"Something in this way," he said, and held it out.
I had seen that very same trick at entertainments endless times before, but I had not expected it here. "That's good," I said with a laugh.
"Isn't it?" said the shopman.
Jip stretched out his hand to take the ball and found merely an empty palm.
"It's in your pocket," said the shopman.
And there it was. "How much will that be?" I asked.
"We make no charge for glass balls," said the shopman politely. "We get them," he picked one out of his elbow as he spoke, "free. Our larger tricks," he added, "we get out of that hat. I don't know if you noticed our inscription, sir. The genuine magic shop."
He drew a business card from his cheek and handed it to me.
"Genuine," he said. "There is absolutely no deception, sir."
He seemed to be carrying the joke pretty far, I thought.
Now he turned to Jip with a smile of remarkable affability.
You know, are the right sort of boy."
Jip received this information in unflinching silence, keeping a steadfast eye on him.
"It's only the right sort of boy can get through our doorway."
And just then, with a start, I discovered something moving about in my hat. I whipped it off, and a ruffled pigeon dropped out and ran about on the counter, until it went into a cardboard box and was seen no more.
"Tut, tut," said the shopman, relieving me of my headdress. "Careless bird. And as I live, nesting."
He took my hat and shook out of it 2 or 3 eggs, a watch, 6 glass balls, and then paper streamers, more and more and more, talking all the time of the way in which people neglect to brush their hats inside as well as out, politely, of course, but with a certain personal application. The streamers rose and billowed on the counter until he was altogether hidden. Suddenly his voice stopped, and the rustle of the paper stopped, and everything was still.
"Have you done with my hat?"
I said loudly after an interval. There was no answer.
I think we'll go now, I called out. Will you tell me how much all this comes to?
More silence.
Let's look behind the counter, Jip, I said. He's making fun of us.
I led Jip round the back of the counter. And what do you think we saw? Nothing.
Only my hat on the floor, and a common conjurer's lop-eared white rabbit lost in meditation. I picked up my hat.
Dad, said Jip in a whisper.
What? Said I.
I like this shop.
So should I said to myself, if the counter wouldn't suddenly extend itself to shut us off from the door. But I didn't call Jip's attention to that. He was busy touching the rabbit which came lolloping past us.
Do some magic, he said to it,
and his eyes followed it as it squeezed through a door I'd not remarked a moment before. This door opened wider, and the shopkeeper appeared again. He was smiling still, but his eye met mine with something between amusement and defiance.
You'd like to see our showroom, sir, he said.
Jip tugged my finger. I glanced at the counter and met the shopman's eye again. I was beginning to think his magic was just a little too genuine for my taste. We haven't very much time, I said. But somehow we were inside the showroom before I could finish.
All goods of the same quality, said the shopman, rubbing his hands together. Everything in the place is genuine magic.
And then to Jip,
do you see anything you fancy here?
There were many things that Jip fancied there. He turned to the shopkeeper with mingled confidence and respect.
Is that a magic sword? He said. A magic toy sword. It neither bends, breaks, nor cuts the fingers. It renders the bearer invincible against anyone under 18. Half a crown to 7 and 6 pence according to size.
The shopman had now got Jip away from my finger. Then I saw, with a qualm of distrust and something very like jealousy, that Jip had hold of his finger instead of mine. No doubt the fellow was interesting, I thought, and had a lot of interesting faked stuff, really good faked stuff. Still, all the same, I wandered after them, saying very little, but keeping an eye on them both. After all, Jip was enjoying it, and no doubt when the time came to go, we should be able to leave quite easily. It was a long, rambling place, that showroom, with archways leading off to other departments. So perplexing, indeed, that I was unable to distinguish the door by which we'd come in. The shopman showed Jip magic trains that ran without steam or clockwork, boxes of soldiers that actually seemed to come alive when you took off the lid. You needed to say some odd-sounding word for this, and Jip got it in no time.
"Bravo," said the shopman, putting the men back into the box and handing it to Jip. "Now."
And in a moment, Jip had said the magic word and had made them all alive again.
"You'll take the box?" asked the shopman.
"We'll take that box," said I, "unless you charge it full value."
"Great heavens, no."
And the shopman swept the little men back again, shut the lid, waved the box in the air, and there it was in brown paper, tied up, and with Jip's full name and address on the paper. The shopman laughed at my amazement.
"This is the genuine magic," he said. "The real thing."
"Too genuine for me," I said. Suddenly I noticed that Jip was quite preoccupied with the shopman. They were whispering together and looking at me. Jip was standing on a little stool, and the shopman was holding a big drum in his hand.
"Hide and seek, Dad," cried Jip. "You're he."
And before I could do anything to prevent it, the shopman had clapped the big drum over him. "Take that off," I cried. "This instant, you'll frighten the boy. Take it off." The shopman did so without a word and held the big cylinder towards me to show its emptiness. My boy had utterly disappeared. I came up to this grinning shopman and shouted,
"Stop this folly. Where is my boy?"
I put out my hand to grip him, but he eluded me. I snatched again, and he turned from me and pushed open a door to escape.
"Stop,"
I said. And he laughed, receding. I leapt after him into utter darkness.
Thud! "Lord bless me heart," cried a voice. "I didn't see you coming, sir."
I was back in Regent Street, and I'd collided with a decent-looking working man. And a yard away, looking a little perplexed, was Jip. I made some sort of apology, and then Jip came to me with a bright little smile, as though, for a moment, he had missed me. And he was carrying 4 parcels in his arms. For a second, I was at a loss. I stared round to see the door of the magic shop, and it wasn't there. There was no door, no shop, nothing. I did the only thing possible. I walked to the curbstone and held up my umbrella for a cab. Within minutes, a cab drew up, and I helped Jip in. For a space, neither of us spoke.
"Dad," said Jip at last, "that was a shop."
He looked completely undamaged. He was simply tremendously satisfied with the afternoon's entertainment. And there in his arms were the 4 parcels. But what could be in them? So we opened them, there and then. 3 contained quite ordinary lead soldiers, but of so good quality as to make Jip forget that originally these parcels had been magic tricks of the only genuine sort. The 4th parcel contained a kitten, a little living white kitten, in excellent health and appetite and temper. All this happened 6 months ago, and now I'm beginning to believe it is all right. The kitten has only the magic natural to all kittens, and the soldiers seemed as steady a company as any colonel could desire. And Jip? Well, I go rather cautiously with Jip. But one day I said, "How would you like your soldiers to come alive, Jip, and march about by themselves?"
"Mine do," said Jip. "I just have to say a word I know before I open the lid."
"Then they march about alone?"
"Of course they do. I shouldn't like them if they didn't do that."
I displayed no surprise. And since then, I have taken occasion to drop in upon him once or twice, unannounced, when the soldiers were about. But so far, I have never discovered them performing in anything like a magical manner. But there is still the question of paying for them. That is the oddest part. I have been up and down Regent Street several times looking for that shop, but it seems to have vanished, totally. I am inclined to think, however, that in that matter, honour is satisfied. Since Jip's name and address are known to them, I may very well leave it to these people, whoever they may be, to send in their bill in their own time.